The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Want to stamp out hunger? Your letter carrier does, and you can help. The Department of Labor celebrating the benefits of registered apprenticeships. And today on the show, the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the Utah AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today, and today is Teacher Appreciation Day, so it's only appropriate that we have Melissa Cropper on the show, longtime sponsor of America's Workforce. Melissa serves as president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. And what's the best way teachers can be appreciated? Melissa's going to run that down. Number one, fully fund Ohio's public schools and stop diverting public money to private schools that have lower standards, less accountability. There's a couple things they can do. Drop the culture wars. Respect the importance of art, music, foreign language. There's a lot they can do. And hopefully, if we're loud enough, they'll go in the right direction. We're also going to talk about the non-compete clause rule. Melissa had the opportunity to submit testimony to the Federal Trade Commission about what's going on with charter school teacher contracts. In some cases, charter teachers could be fined up to $4,000 for resigning and working at another school. That's a chunk of change for a teacher that's making, what, $30,000, $35,000 a year? Also, the overtime rule. Now, teachers may be exempt, but the rule does apply to other OFT members. Melissa will speak to that. Jeff Worthington will be joining us later in the show. Jeff is the president of the Utah AFL-CIO. Website is utahaflcio.org, and he's been in that position since January 1 of 2018, representing 40 different labor unions in the state of Utah. Now, Utah is not what you call a real labor-friendly state. Prior to becoming the president of the Utah Federation, Jeff worked as a locomotive engineer for 39 years for Union Pacific Railroad, where he was a union officer and a member of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. We're going to talk about some legislation. And I'll tell you, this discussion is really good because it shows the power of unions. You know, collectively, we can stop bad things from happening. And that's exactly what the Utah AFL-CIO did recently. House Bill 285. Now, on the face, it appears to be a union dues deduction bill, but under the facade, it was a union busting bill with penalties as a result of certification and recertification requirements. Also, another piece of legislation we're going to get into, HB 429. This bill was to strip civil service or career service employees of their civil service protections and make them all at-will employees. Now, when these went to the legislature, union members woke up and said no. I mean, they marched to the state house and said, this is not going to happen. And a lot of the first responders led the crusade on that. And then all the other labor unions, thanks to Jeff, joined in and they stopped the madness. I tell you, it's great stuff. And Jeff is going to talk all about it as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now, a brief look into the world of labor, the segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. You know, every day in this country, one in eight people, even a higher proportion of kids, go to bed hungry. Well, the letter carrier's annual Stamp Out Hunger food drive aims to fill their stomachs through millions of pounds of donated food. We're talking 1.9 billion pounds of food since 1993. That's when they started this. Well, the drive will occur this Saturday, May 11th, when members pick up boxes and bags of donated food, dried foods, canned foods, non-perishable items, and mailboxes, postal service buildings, and apartment mailrooms from coast to coast. This, by the way, is the largest single-day food drive in the country. Brian Renfro is the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. He said letter carriers know the struggles that people in their communities face, and they see it every day. For more than three decades, we've helped to meet their needs each May, and it's time to pull off this annual miracle again. So here's the deal. Postal trucks transport the donated food to loading docks where union members sort it, then schlep it out to food banks, soup kitchens, homelessness shelters, and other places where the hungry congregate. And the need is especially great now for two reasons. Number one, that the distributors of donated meals have virtually exhausted supplies they got before winter holidays. And the other is the demand for food from the charities skyrockets in the coming summer months because schools shut down, and so do their free and subsidized meals for low-income children. During the school year, those meals are often the only meal the kid gets during the day, sadly. And there's some partners we should salute for this: the AFL-CIO, the United Food and Commercial Workers, and the Rural Letter Carriers. Also, some corporations all day also donate food as well as money. So hats off to the National Association of Letter Carriers. And simply, here's what you do. Any canned goods that you have, put it by your mailbox this Saturday, okay? Just leave it there, and your carrier will pick it up. Now let's talk about the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor is celebrating the benefits of registered apprenticeships and the opportunities they create for young people. And it's happening, well, it started yesterday, and it's happening at 320 special events and more than 70 proclamations across the United States to mark the first annual Youth Apprenticeship Week. Now, this is built on the success of National Apprenticeship Week. Youth Apprenticeship Week will give employers, unions, educators, state agencies, workforce partners, community-based organizations, and other registered apprenticeship sponsors the opportunity to showcase their programs and successes in youth apprenticeships. The annual commemoration also offers youth apprentices a platform on which they can share their apprenticeship experiences and educate the public about the benefits of local youth apprenticeship programs. Julie Sue, the acting labor secretary, says this week recognizes the Biden-Harris's administration's commitment to create employment opportunities for young adults and the critical role they play in our nation's workforce infrastructure. And by the way, if you go back 3 years to 2021, the White House has expanded registered apprenticeships with more than 7,100 new programs, 12,000 new employer partners, and more than 1.4 million apprentices hired. How about that? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Melissa Cropper, on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org. The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Central Ohio and join one of our regulars. And it's very appropriate that we have her on today. She's a longtime supporter of America's Workforce. I'm speaking about Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. oh.aft.org is her website. And usually she's on the second Tuesday, but today is Teacher Appreciation Day. And we certainly appreciate all teachers, especially Melissa Cropper and the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Melissa, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. And I figured, you know, the best way to talk about appreciation for teachers is, what can our elected leaders do so teachers could be really appreciated? Okay, Melissa, and I know I'm going to get an earful from you, and that's why we decided to bump you up today for Teacher Appreciation Day. So you know what? I'm just going to turn it over to you. It's all yours. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. And first of all, thank you for honoring Teacher Appreciation Day and Teacher Appreciation Week. It is meaningful to our people to hear that. But like you said, we need more than just using words at this point in time. Expression, you know, is validating to hear people say, I appreciate you, thank you for the work you do, et cetera. But it's really time for us to make some changes that start with our legislators, as you indicated, and they need to show their appreciation by making some changes in law that will really show teachers and other people who work in schools that we value public education, we value the work that you do, and we respect your knowledge, and we're ready to listen to you and do what you say. it starts with, as we've talked about for a long time now, fully funding our schools. Again, it seems pretty disingenuous to say we appreciate teachers, yet still not fully funding our fair school funding formula. So we've got a budget season coming up again, next GA, and so it's time to fully phase in this fair school funding plan and to stop siphoning money off for private schools, but to really invest in our public schools, invest in the students who go to the schools, and invest in the teachers who teach in the schools. So that would be one really big thing that could happen.
Melissa, you mentioned the Fair School Funding Program, and it's really important that this is highlighted here. And I was reading some numbers here. Back in 2010, so 14 years ago, Ohio was ranked by Education Week as having the fifth best public school system in the nation. Education Week's last rating was in 2021. We dropped to number 20. And then there's U.S. News and World Report. They have Ohio at 29. I mean, we're going in the wrong direction, and I don't know, funding plays a big part of that. Is this just basically the lawmakers don't seem to understand what teachers need in the schools today? Is that part of the answer here?
Well, that's definitely part of the answer. Our lawmakers have gotten caught up in culture war policy, caught up in trying to dictate what happens in classrooms, instead of just listening to teachers and trusting their expertise as to what needs to happen in the classroom. So part of it is, again, lack of funding, but part of it is also not respecting the knowledge and expertise of teachers. And so all this for the past decade, two decades now, all this overemphasis on testing, all the unnecessary paperwork, all this micromanaging of teachers' time. All those pieces have got to go. It's time to really trust that teachers know what need to happen in their classrooms, give them the time and the resources to teach in the way that they know how to teach, and to really make learning relevant for students again. Again, do away with all the testing and test prep and that kind of stuff, and let's get back to making learning more project-based, allowing teachers to do things that connect what's happening in the classroom to what's happening in the world, whether that's talking about critical issues that are happening or taking a subject and giving students exposure to how that could play out in a workplace. So it really just comes down to respect, resources, and relevance. Giving teachers the respect they deserve, making sure they have the resources to do the job they need to do, and allowing them to make learning relevant to students.
Melissa, when it comes to money, it seems like the money is there, but the diverting of the money is the question. And what I want to talk about here is that money going to private schools that don't have the same standards as public schools. Where's the accountability on that? I guess that's my question here.
Well, there's not the same accountability in private schools. And again, the whole voucher scheme originally was sold to us as helping students who are socially economically disadvantaged, helping them get out of so-called failing schools and into better schools. Yet study after study after study has shown that when you compare students who choose vouchers to the students who stay in their public schools, the students in public schools perform better. It's just that we don't have, they're not held to the same testing requirements and the same accountability standards as public schools, so that's not always seen unless someone is doing a research study on it. And again, originally, why vouchers were intended for that reason, now that we have universal vouchers, we've got all this money being diverted to students who have been going to private schools all their lives, and it has nothing to do with their socioeconomic situation anymore. It's just a matter of Senator Matt Huffman deciding that everybody in this state should have the opportunity to go to a private school for it to be paid for with public dollars.
Regarding K through 12, here's some more numbers here. Ohio is giving out $69 million worth of private school vouchers, and that was in 2008. If you go to last year, 2023, Ohio public school funding of private school vouchers is back on track to be more than $1 billion. $1 billion from $69 million to $1 billion. That's a big shift. Right. That's a big shift.
Right. And at a time when, again, we've been working on getting this fair school funding formula fully implemented. It was supposed to, it's a 6-year phase-in. We fought for it to be a much shorter phase-in. Only 4 years, we're only into year 4 of that 6-year phase-in. So there's still hasn't been commitment to fully funding that formula. And now that you've got all this money going out the door to private school vouchers, the question is this, in this next General Assembly, next budget year, are they going to fully fund this formula, or are they going to continue siphoning that money off to private schools at the detriment of public schools where 90% of our students attend school?
We're speaking with Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org, and today is Teacher Appreciation Day. Well, let's talk a little bit about the non-compete clause rule, and I was reading earlier that apparently you testified on this, and the Federal Trade Commission just a couple of weeks ago issued a final rule, and apparently, now let's go to the charter schools here, apparently some charter school teachers got burned on this. Can you explain what happened here?
Yes, it's one of these things that it was kind of a shock to us when we started working with charter schools to find out that they actually charge their teachers liquidated damages, which fall under the non-compete clause. If a teacher decides to leave a school district in May, and let me rephrase that a little bit, if they decide not to come back for the following year, but they make that decision in May, they get charged liquidated damages. So they finish the school year they're currently in, but the charter schools are saying, well, we need to be compensated for the cost, for what it's going to cost us to do a search for a new teacher, which is, you know, extremely bogus. And in law for traditional public schools, teachers have until July 10th to get out of their teaching contract. But again, the charter schools put this May deadline in there, and if you break that May deadline, they charge anywhere up to like $4,000 for their teachers. So we had some teachers at Summit Academy in Parma when we first started organizing there. Some of the people who are organizing team got an offer to go to a traditional public school and make more money. So they left, but it was after that May deadline. And again, that their last paycheck was held, that wasn't enough to cover the liquidated damages. So now 2 years later, some academy is coming after them for the rest of the money that they say they owe. This is because teachers decided to take a different job the following school year, but they made that decision after a May deadline. Wow. So it's really outrageous. It doesn't happen in our traditional public schools. Again, they have a July 10th deadline where if they leave after that point in time, they could possibly have their license suspended, but no money being charged. It's only in charter schools where this money is being charged. And charter schools set this timeline because they don't want their teachers going to a traditional public school. So they set a deadline that comes before when most schools would be hiring for the following year.
That's a chunk of change, $4,000. Wow.
And especially if you're, again, in these charter schools, you're probably only making $30,000, $35,000 a year anyway.
Yeah.
That's a significant chunk of money for
salary.
Them. Yes.
I see the FTC also ruled on overtime. Now, teachers are salaried, so they're exempt from that. But there's other support staff that's going to be covered by this, right?
Correct. Especially members that we represent in, like, our children's services. Our libraries and places like that, if they work overtime now, under this new salary cap, we have more people who are more likely to be able to get paid overtime now. Again, this was something that Obama tried to implement many, many years ago, and it was never, you know, the Trump administration kind of quashed it. But now, again, having President Biden, a very pro-labor, pro-worker president, he's been able to get this through. And as a result, there's going to be about $1.5 billion more dollars going from employers to workers, thanks to this new overtime rule.
And we're talking about, 4 million salaried workers across the country affected by this. Many, of course, in the teaching profession. Melissa, going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much. Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. We're going to let you go, and we do appreciate you and all the members of the OFT and all the teachers that are listening to America's Workforce on today. Appreciation Day. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Jeff Worthington is the head of the Utah AFL-CIO, and he'll be coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
there is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, where you could find more at ulagency.org. All right, let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. And joining us on our live line today is Jeff Worthington. Now, Jeff is the president of the Utah AFL-CIO. Website is real simple, utahaflcio.org. In that position, he represents 40 different labor unions in the state of Utah. He was elected to serve as president of the Utah AFL-CIO on January 1 of 2018. It's been a number of years ago. He's fighting hard, and he's got a real interesting background because he worked for many, many years for Union Pacific. And I want to start right there. Jeff Worthington, thanks for joining us here from America's Workforce. It's important to go to various parts of the country and see how our labor brothers and sisters are doing. I know you got a tough state there, brother. Utah's a right-to-work state, and we're going to get into some legislation there that's not what you call worker-friendly. But thank you for joining us. Talk to me about the time on the railroad. We do a lot with, well, as you know, we're stone's throw from where that derailment happened in East Palestine, Ohio. So we've been addressing railroad issues for a long time here. But talk to me about your time. Let's start there, brother. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on the podcast today. It's definitely my pleasure to be here with you. Like you said, I have a history in railroading. I was a locomotive engineer for Union Pacific Railroad for 39 years. That seems like forever, and it really was forever. But when I first hired out back in the 1978 era, I hired out on Western Pacific Railroad, and in 1983 we had massive flooding here in the state of Utah that pretty much wiped out the Western Pacific Railroad. And that's when the Union Pacific stepped in and says, we'll help you rebuild this, but we're going to merge when it's all said and done. So that's how I ended up with Union Pacific Railroad. But it's a good job as far as union-type jobs. it gave me a way of life that made my life pretty easy. A great health insurance, great retirement, of course, which I'm enjoying today. But the hours were awful. You're on call 24/7, and when your phone rings, you got an hour and a half to get to work. So, but through that 39 years of railroading, I was a union representative for probably, I would say, at least 25 years of that. Representing my fellow employees. So it was just kind of a natural progression for me when I retired from the railroad to step into the leadership seat of the AFL-CIO here in the state of Utah. So that's kind of my background. And I was a third generation railroader. My father and his father worked on the railroad, and now my son works on the railroad. So it's kind of one of those in the family kind of a thing. So anyway, that's my history.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with our listeners. I have to ask you this. It was probably good to have that training. That was a tough job. So what was tougher, dealing with the railroads or dealing with the Utah legislature? That's a tough one there.
That is a that's a flip of a coin. You know, the state of Utah, I don't, if you want to know what the definition of red is, you come to the state of Utah and you'll see what red is. But, you know, I've found my way around the legislature here in the state of Utah. And that's, you know, one handshake at a time, one side door open at a time. You got to rely on relationships that you can make across the aisle. And I've been fairly successful at that, proud of that. As a matter of fact, when President Biden was out here last year celebrating the signing of a veterans bill, I got to shake hands with him and chat with him a little bit. And that's the same thing he asked me. How on earth do you run labor unions in this red state? And I just looked at him and I said, one baby step at a time. That's how you do mm-hmm. it here. So,
yeah.
But we've been pretty successful at making those relationships. You know, our legislative makeup in the Senate, there's 29 seats in the Senate. And out of that, the Democrats only have six of those 29. And in the House, there's 75 seats, and the Democrats only have 14 of those seats. So between the Senate and the House, they don't have enough votes on the Democratic ticket to pass a single bill. So unless you know how to reach across the aisle and make relationships with people from the Republican Party, and you're not going to be very successful in passing legislation. And luckily, we've been able to do that with labor. And like I said, it's been a process. I've been doing it for 6.5 years, and it's finally starting to pay dividends now. So that's how we do our work here.
Jeff, is that primarily due, are your districts gerrymandering? And I could speak to that in the state of Ohio. We're trying to get rid of it here. I know Michigan did a good job of that, but is it pretty much like that in Utah?
Yes, they just completely gerrymandered the entire state last year. And as a matter of fact, it even took out a entire district that was held by a Democrat. So, you know, of course they say, oh, we weren't targeting anybody, but she was a very effective legislator, and they just completely took her district out. So she showed them. She turned around and ran for Salt Lake County Council and was elected to the council. So now she is still involved politically, but just not in the legislature. But yes, yeah. We are very heavily gerrymandered. So,
well, I come from the background, never say never, and you're probably watching what's going on in the South, especially with the UAW, and that was a big win. In Tennessee. Yes. In Tennessee, they got right to work enshrined in their constitution over there. And they're the governor saying, oh, you don't want the union. This is a radical group. You can't have them here. So you got to, you know, hold your head high and keep fighting. But where are we with the legislature? I know that I read a couple of things about union busting going on. And can you fill me in on where we stand right now with legislation, Jeff?
Oh, my goodness. Well, this last session that we just finished up, the 1st of March, we had a couple of bills that were union busing bills. You've probably read about it, heard about it, HB 285, which was brought on by Representative Jordan Tusher here in Utah. And, you know, he presented the bill as a anti-union dues deduction bill. So in other words, if you worked for the municipalities or the state or any governmental entity, you could not have union dues automatically withheld from your paycheck because that was a cost. There was a cost to that he didn't feel like the taxpayers should have to bear. Well, that cost was less than a half a cent. I mean, you donate to United Way, to all of these different 501c3s, and plus, you know, you can have your car payments taken out, your insurance payments, all that stuff. But for some reason, union dues, you know, Anyway, that's where they were hanging their hat. And so I started fighting that bill right out of the get-go because, first of all, it's an attack on unions. You know, it was mm-hmm. the title of the bill was Union Dues Amendments. And I thought, and he said it had nothing to do with unions, which I found ironic. But what people needed to do and what I was successful in working the legislature was look beyond that, because that was the smoke and mirrors that the bill presented itself as, is that it was all about deducting that union dues. But if you looked further into the bill, it also had a lot of really, really negative effects, to the point that it was requiring unions to have to take certification votes every year if you didn't get higher than a 51% or 61% in Florida's case. They would decertify your union, and that decertification would be for 12 months until you could hold another certification election, which every time you do that, it has to be run by a third party. So there's some heavy costs involved with it, which is another way you attack the unions. And this same bill actually passed in Florida. So if you have any Florida listeners here, they'll understand what I'm talking about. And with the passage of that bill down in Florida, the effects of it afterward was 36 unions were decertified. Mm-hmm. In other words, put out of business for 12 months. They couldn't have a collective bargaining agreement. They had no representation. So what happens when you have no representation and no collective bargaining agreement? Well, that's when the corporations have their heyday and go in and yeah. just completely dismantle what you would work so hard to create. And so so we had quite a battle on our hands out here, and we took it to the legislature, and three different times as the president of the AFL-CIO, I put out what I call a call to action. Now, when I put out a call to action, it's an email I send out to every one of my affiliate union leaders, which I have 40 unions in the state of Utah. And so I send this email out to all 40 of those leaders, and I instruct them to get the information out to their membership to be at the Capitol or wherever I need them at a certain time, certain date. So I did three different calls to action. The first one was when that HB 285 was going to the House Governed Ops Committee. And so the morning of that call to action, I showed up at the Capitol and people started showing up, my people, and I was pretty excited about that. And before I knew it, the halls of the Capitol were filling up pretty fast, so I had to make my way down to the committee room door so I could make sure I could get in to testify. And as it turned out, we filled up that entire committee room plus two overflow rooms, one of which was in the House chambers, because we just flooded the Capitol, and they weren't expecting it up at the Capitol. And what a great show of power that was. All the news stations were there. We got all sorts of coverage on that. The newspapers were there. Man, I'll tell you what, all told, I had over 350 people show up for that committee meeting on that day. And I did it twice again after that. When it went to the House chamber, I filled up the hallways of the rotunda and also the gallery chamber of the House. And then we did it in the Senate also on another bill, HB 429, which was a bill that was taking away the rights of all our civil service protections for our state employees that are covered under that agreement. So that's what we did. We just brought out the troops and showed power and It's the first time that it's really happened in Utah, and we've got their attention, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from that. The legislators, both Republican and Democrat, have said that was an amazing show of solidarity, an amazing show of union strength and power, and they expect to see it again next year. And I said, oh, you will. You will definitely see it again, double to what we did this last year. So
you were able to hold it back, at least for now then, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that HB 285, it passed out of that House committee that day that we had the 350 people show up by one vote. And so it got to go to the House floor for third reading. And when it got to the House floor, I had worked those 75 members of the House, and Representative Tusher was taking his whip count of the floor every day, and he never could get enough votes. But what he did when they presented the bill for third reading, he circled it because he knew we didn't have enough votes to pass it out. So by circling it, I don't know if everybody's states are the same, but what that does is basically holds the bill in limbo until he's ready to run it. And so for the next, our session is a 45-day session. And this happened maybe, I want to say, on the seventh day of the session. So basically for the next 38 days, we had to make a showing in the House chamber up in the gallery to let them know that we were watching. And we lobbied every one of the House members to get their commitment on voting no on HB 285. And we felt like we had the votes to kill the bill if he uncircled it. And he knew that. So at the end of the session, on the 45th day, 11th hour, he was still whipping the floor, and he never could uncircle it because we had the commitment from all of the House representatives, both Democratic and Republican, to vote no on that bill. So he never did get to present the bill to the House. So,
well, you did your job, my man. That's why you're getting big bucks to head the Utah AFL-CIO. You know I'm being facetious on that one. You know that, brother.
I understand. I do understand.
Jeff Worthington joining us on our live line today from Salt Lake City. Jeff serves as president of the Utah AFL-CIO. The website, real simple, utahaflcio.org. More to come right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right
as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, if you like a show, and I know you do, and I'll tell you, last year was a banner year, and it's continuing to be a banner year for America's Workforce this year. Share that show, because we want to make sure that this show grows. We get more sponsors. We could do more things, get more guests on our show, like Jeff Worthington. Let's go back to Salt Lake City right now. Jeff is the president of the Utah AFL-CIO, a right-to-work state, and they've had their battle in the legislature, but it's never over. You may win the battle, but you may not win the war, because it's just going to continue. And we've seen that in the halls of Congress. It's pretty reminiscent of what happened. It's so funny. When you painted the picture of what happened here in the recent session, Jeff, it reminded me of Wisconsin under Scott Walker back in 2011, and they tried to do the same thing in the state of Ohio. It failed miserably. We called it SB5. It was an attack on public sector workers. And I don't know, it seems like, and you mentioned in the first segment, they wanted to strip civil service or career service employees of their civil service protections and make them all at-will employees. And when you're an at-will employee, you are at the will of the employer. So on a given day, if that employer said, well, Jeff Worthington, I don't like you, you're out of here, that's pretty much the end of the story. You have no protections. I want to go back a little bit. You mentioned the recertification, and you mentioned what Florida did. Now, Florida, they have to have, what, 60% of the membership to recertify their unions. They tried, just to be clear, they tried to do that in Utah, and you pulled it back to, what, 50% plus one? Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Yes, you did. Yeah, we were able to negotiate with him early on because he could feel the pushback, and we were able to get that 61% that Florida had reduced to 51% in the state of Utah. But we were never going to settle for that anyway. That was just positioning.
Well, congratulations on rallying the troops, what you did in this recent session, because you scared those lawmakers. They didn't realize the power of unions and the solidarity of unions. And I just want to take another look at Utah here. It is a right-to-work state, and I was reading your union density is down there. Not as bad as South Carolina, but I'm looking at around 4%. 4% of the workforce is represented by a union. You contrast that with New York. New York is well over 20%. I think Hawaii is number one. They're about 25, 26%. With that being said, and I, you know, with what happened here in the legislature, this is the time I just want to speculate and talk about maybe, you know, there's a lot of organizing going on around the country. And I mentioned earlier about the auto workers organizing in the South. I mean, a lot of that has to do with what happened last year with the Big Three. I'm just wondering, you see some momentum building when it comes to, you know, unions, according to Gallup, they're very favorable right now. People have a lot of respect for what they do. So I'm just wondering, maybe that number, that 4%, you've got to have some goals as president of the Utah AFL-CIO, maybe get that to 5, 6, 7% in the years ahead. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's growing even as we speak. You know, just in the past 6 months, I've been able to bring on another 5,500 members just in the past 6 months. So my numbers are going up. You know, this next generation of young workers, they really have the fire in the belly. They, for some reason, understand what the unions represent and the protections that the unions offer, and they want to be part of that. And that's really a refreshing commentary, you know, being as we've been fighting the past, 15 years trying to grow our unions, and we've seen nothing but slipping and sliding away. And so for this turnaround now, it's an exciting time. You know, I'm just getting phone calls just about every week of people wanting to organize. And so it keeps me busy.
I would imagine the trades are pretty active there. I mean, you've probably got a lot of mineral deposits in there that they're working on. Can you share any information on that with us?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Utah is, I believe right now, ranked number one in the nation as far as economic growth. We have just had phenomenal growth here. A lot of industry moving in. You know, it's becoming the new Silicon Valley. We've got a lot of highways and bridge work and, you know, completely remodeling downtown Salt Lake City, you know, and now we looks like we're going to be getting the Olympics in 2034, I believe it is. And it's just endless as far as the work that's out there that we got to do, you know, and then with the big push, you know, for clean energy and that we're leading the country on a lot of different aspects. We're currently working on electrification of the infrastructure, and that's putting electricity in the highways so that that charges your cars while you're driving. That's still a little ways off, but this is the kind of vision that we have here in the state of Utah. So that equates to density to our unions. You know, people are signing up right and left. So it's a good thing for us. Yes.
Yeah. Now you couple that, if you can do anything about the gerrymandering, get the right people in office. Do you realize what your union density could go up to, Jeff?
That would be the best Christmas present I could ever get is, you know, to have that ungerrymandered. Is that a word? I don't know. But yeah, that's the biggest hurdle that we have to get over is we are so dominated by the Republican Party. And you know, it's kind of interesting because being a labor leader in a red state like Utah and having to deal with a complete trifecta, you know, of Republicans owning all the offices and executive branches and that. I've learned that the way that you deal with them is I don't look at parties so much anymore because, you know, the Democrats are so outweighed here. And I tell them this all the time is I'm really not too concerned whether you got a D or an R on your lapel. What concerns me the most is where do you stand with me on the policies and issues that pertain to my working families in the state of Utah. And it's gotten me a lot of leverage and a lot of connections and opening doors and stuff, you know, so you do what you have to do to survive. And that's what I do.
Yeah, obviously it's working here. Look what you did with the legislature in the last session there. I'm going to leave it on that one note. I'm going to leave it on that one note, except for one more thing. This has nothing to do with labor. Is the Salt Lake drying up? I'm just wondering. I've heard a couple of stories.
It is filling back up as we speak. It's on the news last night, I think they reported that the lake has risen 2.5 feet since its low point last fall. So it's we've had a record-breaking year out here in Utah as far as moisture and snowpack and everything. So we're looking at seeing the lake come up quite a bit this year. You know, I think we've still got another 6.5 feet that they're predicting the lake's going to come up. So I think we're on the right trend anyway.
Good. You're on the right trend in more ways than one, brother. All right. We're going to leave it there. Yeah. Jeff Worthington, president of the Utah AFL-CIO, utahaflcio.org. I truly enjoyed the conversation with you. Let's stay in touch on these issues and more. And let's grow that union density, okay?
Absolutely. And anytime you want to chat, you just give me a call. I'll make myself available for you guys.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Ohio AFL-CIO and IATSE 839, the Animation Guild. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.